and welcome to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Vesna.
Jake Nguyen.
And we are very excited to have Vesna joining us again this week. Each week we cover different stories, and you were telling me about the major struggle in finding any lesbian content. Like, how difficult was it? Was it like finding a lesbian in a gay needle stand? Like what was that like?
Yeah, it was kind of like finding a lesbian that you like in the gay community. No, it was what I thought might be a shorter process was about 4 hours of various terms like gay, lesbian, LGBT, queer, to see what kind of stories I could pull up that were lesbian related. And if it was, if I used the term gay, it was predominantly gay men. And if I use the term queer, it still was predominantly gay men and sometimes women. But if I use the term lesbian, it was like one or two articles within the last 3 months or 4 months around the world in a various on various different sites, which I think is very telling in terms of what we prioritize of what we think is newsworthy or important, what types of people are important to be talking about.
Well, I think there's certainly a lot to be said there. I know that a lot of lesbian folks, there is lesbian media out there, so distinct places to go to. You know, you're not going to get that so much on pinknews.co.uk, mm-hmm. but you might get it more on them. I'm not familiar with all of them. I did meet some of them at a conference in Canada, and of course in Canada, where are we talking about? In Montreal, at Fierté Canada Pride, that was where it was. Yeah, you're right. It's not easy to come across that content at all. Now, I think you were talking to Sebastian about this before. You know, part of that is a lot of news is often covering when things go wrong. It's bad stories. It's not good. You know, death and plight and disaster sell. They sell papers. And you know, gay men are more often targeted for hate crimes because, and we'll actually talk about that a little later on in the show. But yeah, I mean, is it the case that more bad things happen to gay people, like gay men, than bad things happening to lesbians?
I mean, I sincerely doubt that that's the case. I really don't think that that's the case. But I think that whose voices matter, or whose voices are heard to matter, if the same type of crime happens to a woman, it's not as important or as newsworthy, I think. And it's a matter of like, also, you know, even like with sexual assault, right, believing that it happened and things like that. So there's a lot of layers there that mm-hmm. Means that the story just doesn't make it.
I agree with that. I think it also has to do with a lot of variables, because demographically, gay men, openly out gay men, like probably is the most dominant demographic of the LGBTQ community. So when you think about it, it's sort of like the game has always been set that way. And there's lesbian coverage for news, probably, I think, could also be affected by the amount of lesbian are actually in journalism, or the amount of gay men or queer people who are actually interested in the lesbian subculture of queer news in general. Like, if you look up gay news, it's probably a needle in a haystack to actually find an article which is a word lesbian, like a lesbian focus on it. Mm. At the same time, I mean, it's, I don't know.
But does that mean that, you know, things aren't happening to, like, there isn't, let's
say, definitely
violent abuse or rape or all these, like, you know, so yeah. why don't we talk about that? Why doesn't that matter? Why don't gay men care about that? Right.
I mean,
to bring that up and talk about that rather than all strictly like gay male issues.
I think they should. I mean, it's something to improve upon. But I mean, I think gay news is just it's quite new. It's not new because it's gay. It's just new because people are only starting to actually develop the system of what is actually news.
Yeah.
Like right now, if you look at general news, or you look at like the New York Times, they got Pacific section and they got Pacific topics.
But I think that's also a feminist issue. I don't separate those two. Those two, like the gay community and like the feminist movement, as not having separate goals. They should be kind of intertwined. And if it's new, I feel like it should be incorporating as many people's voices as, rather than becoming big and powerful based on the voices of only like white men who appear like masculine.
Journalism in general historically has always been a male, more of a male dominant industry already. Yeah.
Well, I know that obviously gay men do consume news. I think we're a very good example of that. You know, I think it's interesting. I like what you were saying about it all depending on the voices as to who got into the news. Now, we usually look at what's happened in the past week or so to kind of draw out some of the stories that we will then discuss. And, you know, what we ended up seeing, because this is something that we don't usually cover because we try not to cover American news, but there was a story of a lesbian couple who were refused tickets to prom, you know, but they were also in Texas. And we're constantly seeing, you know, gay couples in the Deep South being refused to go to prom or being kicked out of prom or being told they can't run for prom king and queen and so on and so forth. So this isn't really out of the ordinary. But that's one of only two or three lesbian stories we saw. Another one was Jackie Chan's daughter, who I think is out in, she's in Canada somewhere, currently homeless. And, you know, blamed her parents for being homophobic and that's why she's homeless. So really there's a big conversation happening there around, you know, is she cashing in on that? Is she sort of trying, is this a desperate plea for help? You know, her parents, who is Jackie Chan and the mother whose name I forget, you know, are denying that that's the case. But yeah, no, it's, was that in the news because it is a lesbian who's desperately looking for help? Or was it because...
Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan's daughter.
Exactly. Etta is her name. I just wanted to make sure we get her name in the recording there. But yeah, so on April 24th, it posted the video to YouTube. You can check it out. We'll have it linked on our website, w.kenqueer.news. Let us know, what do you think? Do you think that there is no lesbian news because lesbians aren't doing anything newsworthy? Or is it a problem with the news just not covering lesbians? What do you think? Let us know at Talk and Queer, and you can reach out to us on our website, Facebook, and Twitter. Now, you actually have a big disagreement with the term queer.
And yes, I do.
We nearly got into it in the weeds earlier, and I'm bringing this up because one big sort of lesbian adjacent bit of news is that Janelle Monáe came out as a proud young queer black woman this past week or so. So we'll be playing a track by Janelle Monáe, and I think we're going for I Like That, which we're pretty excited about. We don't often play Janelle Monáe on the show because, of course, she only just came out. But you're not a big fan of queer as a term. Why is that?
I feel like in the world we live in, to not take a strict stance on something is to maintain the status quo. And the term queer is very conducive to that. So it allows people to not commit, really. Not that I'm saying they have to. They don't have to be either gay or straight. But I feel like for women, it's easier and they more often come out first as queer in order to not appear as threatening within a patriarchal world. To not appear as threatening. And then later on, like, for example, Kristen Stewart, right, who came out as bisexual, and then she said later on that she was gay, right? And I feel like there's is a common theme in that where it's harder for women or maybe they feel more threatening to call themselves lesbians or fully gay than it is to call themselves queer or bisexual, which is not to say that I think that they're all just hidden, like, lesbians, but I think that a lot of it is to use it. And I felt the same way when I first came out, which was, I'm gonna say that I'm bisexual because I don't want to be too threatening.
So is it that idea of, you know, kind of keeping a door open to the men so that they're not too upset that, you know, they've lost another one to Carol Pope? Like, there's, you know, that there's that's kind of part of the process. You know, we do speak a lot on the show about kind of bi erasure and the fact that as bisexuality is used as a sort of stepping stone, it does affect folks who are bi in terms of kind of invalidating that sexuality in a way. I think for the sake of the audience here, it might be worth defining the word queer. And how I understand it, of course, we do acknowledge that for older folks, queer was a derogatory term. It was a term of abuse. And for older folks, you know, that there's certainly maybe some bad memories associated with that. But it's kind of being recaptured and reclaimed, and it sort of comes out of that academic term of something that's not normal. That's, you know, you got the normal or your standard, your typical, which would be straight. And then whatever is not straight is queer because it isn't the thing that it would normally be. And of course, there could be value judgments attached to that. So that's kind of where queer kind of academically comes from, is like what's being excluded, what is outside of the standard model, and everything that deviates from the standard model is queer in one way or another. And that's sort of where the sexuality comes from. And I think the reason why folks are sort of leaning towards that more than bisexuality is because we're developing this more nuanced understanding of gender identity and gender expression. You know, bisexuality implies that you are attracted to men and women. And the question is, where do trans folks fall in that scale? You know, do you have to wait for them to reach an end goal before you find them attractive? Or, you know, where do gender non-conforming folks fall within that? So, and I'll be honest with you, this language is really rooted in kind of urban centres. You're not likely to get someone, you know, in Cape Breton or Abbotsford, you know, having an intense debate around language such as this. It is almost the exclusive preserve of sort of urban elites that have the time to kind of navel gaze over this language. But it does relate to that kind of idea of, you know, we don't know exclude against trans folks, so we can't be in a binary because we don't believe in the binary. So they use queer as this nice, safe, catch-all umbrella term. But you're thinking that in doing so, by avoiding insulting anybody, the idiom is now...
Yeah, if you don't... not really pick a side, but if you don't... Yeah, if you don't say something of substance, it's just I'm not normative. I don't abide by normative behavior. You maintain the status quo, which is a patriarchy, which is very much to the detriment of women and, you know, and also to trans people, right? So it's so for example, the woman who calls herself queer is still perceived to be straight, relatively straight, right? No one's going to assume that she's more into women or actually a lesbian, mm-hmm. and she's calling herself queer. So you just continue, you're maintaining that assumption and you're not really challenging that assumption by saying, no, like I'm, but in the same way as when you would say I'm gay or I'm a lesbian, right? Mm-hmm. And if you appeared like feminine, then it's challenging the patriarchal assumption that women, like women that appear a certain way are strictly for men, right? Yeah. Or strictly for the male gaze. So you actually challenge that when you make that claim. But you can't do that with the term queer. And because I'm a feminist and I'm very politically motivated, I feel like these things, our identity politics, are also politically motivated and they need to play a role in that as well.
I think you're absolutely right. There's so much, you know, the words that we use to describe who we are so fundamentally attached to personal identity and the politics and history and so on. And it all interplays in many ways. You know, there are undoubtedly people listening to this who are upset with how I've defined queer and so on and so on. And I'm certain that I have missed the boat and maybe I've got it wrong. And if so, please let me know at Talk and Queer. and, you know, maybe I can address that in the next episode. But it's, you know, we're always going to get something wrong with identity because there are a bajillion people in the world who all have their own I'm not going to say everybody's a unique snowflake, but there's certainly the sense that, you know, your own experiences shape who you are and so on. Now, you mentioned earlier about people who are straight and then they're bi, then they're gay, or in Kristen Stewart, you know, and it kind of moves around.
Yeah.
And in the gay community, there's this sense of, you know, we have to stick to our guns.
Yeah.
Because we've made Born This Way the reason why we have rights.
It's political.
Exactly. Right. And if we start to challenge that by changing our sexuality, are we going to lose it? Now, I think there are some studies of sexuality where it is certainly elements of it are nature-based, so there is certain things that are kind of biological. I think that we did a whole episode on hypothalamus. We spoke to a doctor out of Oxford about that. But also there are certain studies that have looked at different things. And we've spoken before on our show about how your sexuality is also context-driven. Mm-hmm. You know, your sexuality in an all-male boarding school would be different than your sexuality in a public school that isn't gender segregated. Your sexuality when you're in your room with a grandmother is very different from how you sexually exist in a space with your lover, you know, and these things, context affects how you interact. So although we don't like to admit that sexuality changes, you know, I'm in the camp of, you know, people's, where they are in life, you know, their experiences, their environments, all impact what and who they find attractive. And that changes as people develop. So I also do believe some of it is some kind of biological. So maybe I disagree with you on that, that, you know, people can move and it's not them hiding behind identities. Maybe it's them actually changing their identities.
I think I agree with you that people can change their... I don't think that sexuality is strictly biological or even maybe even primarily biological. I think our environments play a very large role in the types of people we become. But I think it's become very unpopular to talk about that because, like you said, politically you seem to be taking away rights that were gained based on a specific type of argument, which was that we're just like you, we're normal like you. It's just something we can't help. We can't help the way we are. And once you say you can kind of help it, then you get into the well, then just be straight argument or whatever, right? Yeah. So. But within that context, it matters then to make a claim.
Yeah, I know. We have to stake our... And this goes back to my point that if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for everything. You know, and it's
strategic.
It's, exactly.
It's not essentialist. So it's not, this is who I am for all of time, forever.
Yeah.
But this is who I need to be now. And I need to make that claim to get where I need to go politically or wherever it is that I need to go.
Yeah.
And that's what I think lesbianism needs to be now as it was... as being gay was before,
mm-hmm.
in terms of getting visibility.
Are you still in the camp of queer folks are hedging their bets and they're not being strong enough, which is ironic?
No, I don't think they're all like that, but I think it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably a lot of people who are.
Well, let us know. Message us at Talk and Queer on Facebook and or Twitter. Is being queer easier than being a lesbian? Let us know what you think. Quite a controversial opinion. We'd love to have your feedback on that. We're playing I Like That by Janelle Monáe, and we'll be back just after this. Sometimes I'm mystery, sometimes I'm free, depending on my mood, on my attitude. Sometimes I want to roll or stay at home, walk in contradiction, get some factual and fiction. A little crazy, little sexy, little cool, little
called me weird. We was in math class, third row. I was sitting by you, right before Mr. Ammon's class. Cause my mama couldn't afford new J's polo, thrift stores, thrift clothes. That was all I knew. Do you remember? I remember when you laughed when I cut my perm off and you rated me a 6. I was like, damn. But even back then, with the tears in my eyes, I always knew I was the shit. I like that.
To Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
No, it's not. It's Jake and Vesna.
Thank
you. Wait, you're Jake?
No, you're Jake.
Wait, you're Luke?
I don't even know anymore.
I don't know. Maybe Sebastian got here.
Actually, over during the song, we were kind of chatting away here, and you know, as people do on a talk show. And you actually, you somewhat disagreed with us. do you want to kind of flesh out your point before we move on to the next topic?
Well, to your point, I would say I agree and disagree because I do believe that sexuality is on a spectrum regardless of biology or context. But at the same time, you as a person don't have to represent yourself in a box. Like, you don't have to choose a terminology and stick with it. At the same time, it does matter because that's how people see you and that's how people... perceive you and put you into context and treat you, because you're not gonna treat a straight man the same way you treat a gay man. Like, as a gay man in the office, I don't have, you know, straight man, like, I work in a construction company, I don't have plumbers go up to me and like, oh, she's hot. Like, that's not a thing. And if I identify as queer,
they've tailored their behavior
exactly. So, you know, like, it shouldn't, like, honestly, I don't think it should matter. You can go as a watering can if you want. I don't really care. But, you know, that's
if
how
you
I
identify
would...
as a watering can, please let us know. I'm talking queer. I'd love to meet somebody who identifies as a watering can. Just...
And maybe they can water our plants. But that's how I'm going to treat you, because that's how you identify yourself.
But I think it's just relevant to make the point that you're saying it shouldn't matter, but it does. And what the ideal, like, world would look like, and whether it should or shouldn't matter in that world, is different from the world we live in. And in this world, it means something to identify in a specific way.
So that's,
it politically means
something. So that's why I kind of disagree and agree with you, because I do believe sexuality is on a spectrum, again. But, you know, it shouldn't really matter. And the word, the use of the word queer, which essentially, to simplify it, means other, it's not a bad way of representing yourself, but it's definitely not a great way either. Like, I personally don't think it is. And
well,
you can hate me if
you
want.
Know, I am cemented within queer and gay culture, very much gay male culture. Like, I've got that down. If there's a pop quiz on gay culture, I'm coming out, like,
you
know, I'm on the winning trivia team for that, you know what I mean? And it's like, so I'm very much focused within that space. And, you know, there is kind of different cultural elements to, you know, the lesbian community. And even, like, the folks who identify as queer, they have a totally almost different culture as well. And, you know, they all kind of bleed in together and stuff. But... yeah, I forget where I was going with this. But brings me, not knowing where I'm going with this, brings me very nicely, as a segue, very awful segue, into our next story. And I think this all still ties to the importance of language. Now, in the UK, there's a show called First Dates. It's very good. A very handsome French guy sets up dates for...
There's an American version as well.
Is there? Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Bit of an instinct reaction then. Sorry about that. I'm not a great fan of American remakes of British content. So it's... except for House of Cards, before the whole spacey rapey thing. So,
Is it half of American TV British remakes anyway?
Yeah, it's not good. No, they have.
It's not good.
They have.
Well, they say have.
They have ideas. No,
they do have ideas.
They have their own ideas. Okay.
Like you know, Cars 2. What other ideas did they have?
Well, we're gonna come back to this. So, within this TV show, they've had gay couples before. I think we've actually reported on a couple of other times that came up, and this is important. Because there are really only like 5 or 6 channels the entire country watches. So you have like a 1 in 5 chance that somebody in Britain has seen this show because everybody watches 1 of 5 channels. BBC, nobody really watches BBC Two, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5, and maybe Sky. You know, like that's where everybody's going to be. So whatever happens on kind of the prime time television has a major impact. So I'm just giving you a bit of context here. So on this show, they had a gay couple, and the gentleman on the show said that, you know, he was looking for somebody who is straight acting. Now, he even acknowledged it with, you know, this is not very popular in the gay community, but he wants somebody who is straight acting. Now, before we get into that, I do want to note that for folks who were listening on the radio, last week our recording did not go so well at all. And there is like a podcast-only version of the content we produced last week where me and Bradley actually talked about misogyny and how that comes into language. So a bit of a carry-on from last week. If you're a podcast listener, if you weren't, check it out. We'd love to, you know, provide some extra content there. So anyway, you know, didn't want somebody who was gay acting. And I think you actually, before we started the show, you know, we were talking about how that isn't really internalized homophobia, which is the idea of being afraid of being gay yourself, which often is what traps people in the closet, the idea of, the consequences of coming out. But rather, you said it's rooted within misogyny. There's a great tweet here where Matt Howard tweeted, "The only thing gay acting about anyone is what they do in the bedroom," which I think is a perfect kind of way of summing it up, you know. And of course, there's that absolutely dreadful sweater that the Canadian Centre for Gender and Sexual Diversity created, which is made out of gay people's hair. So it's a gay sweater because it really points to the ridiculousness of how can something be gay. Anyway, whatever. So why is gay acting misogynist and not just homophobic?
Well, I think that there is a thing in which we kind of have an idea of what a gay person looks like, and it's rooted in our ideas of gendered norms. And so the lesbian woman who appears masculine is believed to be gay, and the feminine appearing gay man is believed to be gay. But interestingly, with him, he what he's saying is, I don't want someone who presents feminine, which is a gendered issue, which in my mind is a feminist issue, is not an issue of homophobia. So he doesn't mind that the guy's gay, right? Like, it's not about whether he's gay or not. It's about his gender presentation, which is intricately linked with how we perceive sexuality. Yeah. It isn't actually indicative of sexuality, but it is how we tend to group people and perceive their sexualities. And so in that sense, it's misogynist to say that, because it's the association with women, with femininity, with weakness or whatever it may be, that he doesn't want, he's not sexually attracted to.
Well, I'm gonna break down straight acting. You know, what do we mean by straight acting? And I think we're kind of looking at the sort of stereotypical male attributes, and they're, you know,
masculine,
yeah. You know, breadwinner, built like a lumberjack, you know, all of these things that are.
So you.
That is not what I am. I am built like a lumberjack.
He's a lumberjack, all
that's
right.
That's eaten all of the bread. Like, that's where that's the problem.
Not just the bread, it's the wood too.
The wood too!
Oh my gosh. Thanks for the support there, Jake. But no, it's the idea that somebody who's straight is sort of. And it comes actually perfectly back to when I was talking about queer. You know, you've got queer as being anything that isn't straight. So really, you've got the normative, which is straight, and everything that's abnormal or out of the normal is queer. So really what he's saying is he wants somebody who's normal. And there's so much kind of attached to that language. And I don't know, I think you're absolutely right that it is a massive gendered position, because really he's saying, if you're not straight acting, how do you define that? You know, we immediately think, and this is actually what Bradley was talking about last week, you know, we immediately think of, you know, somebody who's a bit light in their loafers, who's effeminate, who's kind of very expressive with their hands, maybe somebody who at 30 paces you can tell is a gay man. Yeah, so there, and he actually was talking about how homosexuality is actually can be visible. So he was talking about discrimination at the workplace and how homosexuality is not considered a visible minority, even though kind of this straight acting idea and the idea of discriminating against effeminate men, they're visual cues. So his argument was that, you know, we need to consider gay men who don't have passing privilege. And I think that also comes in and speaks to this here, the idea that you're gay, but nobody can tell, so you get all the privileges of being a straight person because no one's jumping to that conclusion that you're a gay person because they can't tell. So really, and this is why everybody was so upset.
But the thing is, they can never tell. They don't know for sure ever, right? The issue is they don't want, the issue is in the gender transgression, right? They don't want to see the gender transgression. It's not really about whether or not what you're doing privately because you don't know. Just because someone appears straight acting doesn't mean that they're straight, right? So is your issue with the fact that they're gay, or is your issue with the fact that they're transgressing gender norms?
And I think it may be the other one. It's interesting because in British culture we have camp, which is sort of effeminate male behavior. And David Walliams is actually a very good example of that. He's I believe, very much a straight man.
He is?
But very camp. I know. Everyone's like, what? And Michael McIntyre as well often surprises people that he's straight. And it's that kind of, you know, very expressive and, you know, people just jump to that conclusion. But in Britain, we actually have that's actually distinctly its own sort of thing, is, you know, somebody who is camp, you don't attribute a sexuality to that. Although typically if someone's camp, they're usually gay, but that's, you know,
I don't know.
Not a certain thing.
I agree and disagree with you, both of you, again.
Again.
Because I feel like what Vesna is saying is coming from a very academic point of view. I do agree with you that it is it could be a misogyny problem. It could also be a transgression sort of perspective on gender and sexuality is a bit skewed for this guy. So in my opinion, at the end of the day, it's just whether or not he actually, like, how does he define straight acting when he said that? Like, at the time, I just feel like, because I sort of have a weird experience with being straight acting, sort of. I'm not exactly, like, have passing privilege. Like, people could look at me and it's sort of like a maybe. If you know me in real life.
I agree.
So, but like back in Asia, well, first of all, people don't really care. That's the first thing. In Asia, the concept of sexuality and gender is a bit more flexible. So if it's not your kid, they can be male, female, or anything. Like, they don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, being straight acting is not important. But if it's this important for this guy to be looking for that trait in a partner, then is it the masculinity that he's looking for? Is it the passing privilege? Because obviously, you know, if you want to, but like that's the thing for him. If he's on a first date show, if you have watched this, he has to like go out in public, have a dinner with this guy. So straight acting actually does nothing to hide his sexuality. So he's not actually hiding. So the straight acting that he's referring to is actually more of a desirable attribute that he wants.
Which is masculinity.
Which we assume is masculinity.
But it can't be anything else because it's not the case that he wants the guy to be straight.
Yeah, definitely
right?
Not.
He definitely doesn't want the guy to be straight. So it's an issue of masculinity. And the question is, And it's not odd either, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think we had a discussion about it
at
earlier date that this is actually a common thing that happens within the gay male community, right?
Well,
where normative standards of masculinity are far more attractive than men who transgress those norms. That's common. It's not what he's saying is not like a odd, I don't think, for what I've heard.
I think it's not new, it's just a very straightforward way to say it.
So he's just saying what everybody else is thinking and doing, and
not what everyone else is thinking is doing, but it's, if you go on Grindr or any of the gay apps, straight acting is sort of like a term that people don't really use, but some people do, just because
what I've seen recently is like bro mask for mask, that's the language.
Yeah, mask for mask,
yeah,
that's
masculine,
a new one.
For masculine, so, which really is saying I don't want effeminate, which is, you know, back to
same
that
same thing. Yeah,
yeah, exactly,
which
yeah,
is misogyny.
It is coming back to misogyny. But you know, if you tell people that, you know, you read this article and this guy is a misogynist, people would have a hard time reconnecting that dot, because people really, not a lot of people break it down, straight acting, as, you know, straight, and then down to straight and gay, down to masculine and feminine, down to, you know, the gender roles.
Because
and gender
because the feminist movement and the gay liberation movement didn't grow together, they grew apart.
Yeah,
and one was about sexuality and the other one's supposed to be about gender. And therefore we fail to see the link between the two and how we tend to use gender to determine sexuality.
Well, that's kind of the problem with the gay community as well, I think, because most gay men don't really go too deep into anything more than their sexuality. And, you know, like you said, the feminist movement and the gay movement really move more than, like, parallel than actually ever meeting or like having any intersection of sexuality and gender together. So people,
well, and that's where you get the rise of misogyny in within the gay community, right?
But people don't
because
recognize
feminism
it.
Didn't
yeah
penetrate into, I don't like using that word, sorry, didn't get, you know, too involved with how the gay movement was how gay liberation was progressing, which is problematic.
I disagree. I think that feminism had a major impact on the gay movement because it stopped being called the gay movement and became the LGBT movement, you know, and it's, and the fact
that was as a result of feminism, is that what you're saying?
Exactly, yeah. And the fact that lesbian folks were annoyed that gay men were always front and center, so they literally flipped the acronym. And that really boils down, a lot of people, like, is it GLBT, GLBTQ, GLBT, MSM, GLBTQQ2A, GLBTABCD, like, LGBTQ, like, which one's which? And really, it depends on when you're asking.
Yeah.
As in what period in time, because of course, you know, feminism had an impact at a certain period and we kept adding different identities. We're often seeing GSM now, which is gay and gender minorities, gender and sexual minorities, sorry. You know, different language constantly changing. So yeah, the role of feminism has had an impact because literally the name changed.
So what you're saying is that there's been a change in name, but in substance, in terms of who we care to talk about on the news, is still primarily gay male men. So I think that the name change is not as significant as, I don't think it's done anything very significant in terms of
how we
approach the
issues.
My
point here was that in terms of the Canadian queer history, feminism did have a deep impact at that time. So historically has had an impact. Do we now need to, you know, re-engage? Absolutely. I think that's absolutely something that needs to happen.
I sort of disagree and agree with you two. Again, because, well, first of all, I agree with Vesna because she's right about the name change doing less significance than the actual movement. I feel like at the time, yes, but the feminist movement was more about equality and equity, and that was sort of in line with what the gay movement
exactly
was supposed to be about.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a serendipity thing. It's a serendipitous thing that it happened, but it didn't actually change the conversation or change the concept of gender and sexuality within the gay community or the straight community. It's just, it sort of solidify the role of gay woman, lesbian, and queer woman in the movement, but that did not demyth or debunk or change anything about how okay. people think about masculinity or femininity.
I want to make absolutely clear to all our listeners that what gay men now do, you know, is something that needs a lot of work. Clearly, we're seeing misogyny. We're seeing it in terms of mask and mask and so on. But I do not want to lose track of the fact that there was incredible work done by powerful women engaging with the movement, reforming the movement in the 80s and 90s, at the time that really cemented equal marriage in Canada, that, you know, cemented adoption and so on and so forth. So really, when Canada went through what the states are going through now, mm-hmm. women were a major key part of leading that. So let's not lose track of the Canadian history here.
So I do apologize if I did sound like I was trying to downplay the woman's role in the gay movement, but I think in the context that we were talking about in terms of changing
gender norms,
they sort of left that sort of scratching the surface.
No, and I think, like, I totally agree. I don't feel like that was problematic what you said, because it was, they gave women the right to vote or to enter certain spaces or to do specific things that only men were allowed to do, but it wasn't about, you know, revolutionizing our concepts or ideas or our language.
That was actually giving women's rights and equality and equity in real time, but in concept, you know, the people and society conceptual things last much longer than that. Like, you can't erase the misogyny for decades and decades, for hundreds of years, over, you know, one movement, over 50, maybe even half a century. Okay. That would not go away.
I may concede legacy of what happened in the 80s and 90s and the early 2000s. We're not feeling so much now. There clearly is misogyny that needs to happen, that needs to be tackled, but
definitely
I am very firmly in favor of the fact that women advocates within the LGBT community have had a astonishing impact in terms of how we've addressed the Little Sisters incident, for example, where the books were banned, and I think that was lesbian pornography that it was banned, and that was a key moment in Canadian queer history, was incidents like that. Like, I mean, I just want to make sure that we don't lose track of where we've been, even if we don't really feel the impacts of that now so much, without knowing that history. Now, I am going to jump to the next song. This is Vivek Shreya and the Queer Songbook Orchestra. I'm actually really excited because the Queer Songbook Orchestra will be coming up with their own album soon. Super excited about that. They take songs that are really extremely impactful on the community. But there was a song with Cyndi Lauper that people like, and they cover huge songs that have made major impact, mm-hmm. And kind of, yeah, they're a 12-piece orchestra. Now, they've teamed up with Vivek Shreya for the album Part-Time Woman a little while ago. Vivek Shreya is a trans woman born from Edmonton, and this is a great track. This is Part-Time Woman. We thought it was hilarious, and we really wanted to put it in there, and we'll be back just after this.
I don't shave, I don't wear makeup, no skirts, I don't dress up. What does that make me? Does that make me a part-time woman? How many high notes do you have to reach? How many hours do you have to bleed? Oh, will I always be a part-time woman?
Part-time woman.
I don't shave,
everyone, welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Sebastian.
I'm Luke.
Jake?
Wow, I didn't know you were a Jake. Is it Jake?
Yeah, did I get Jake more attractive? Or?
Yeah, we're just...
The hair just got darker.
So we've been talking about language and how misogyny plays into different queer culture and gay history. And really, it's been quite a rambling conversation, but in a good way that has kind of centered around that key theme. And we've been drawing on some recent news stories and about how these news stories are sort of symptoms of this broader topic. Now, I wanted to talk about James Miller of Austin, Texas, and I really am only bringing this up because I think it beautifully captures one of the extremes of what we're talking about here. Now, he was found not guilty of manslaughter and murder by a jury. He allegedly killed his neighbor, Daniel Spencer. And during the trial, James Miller used gay panic as a defense. Now, for our listeners, are they thinking, what is gay panic? Is it when a homosexual realizes he's 5 minutes late to the latest episode of RuPaul's Drag Race? I mean, it's true. If you want to see a gay panic, tell them they're late for RuPaul's Drag Race. It'll work like a T every time. But no, not in this case. In this case, gay panic is where, and it's not a valid defense here in Canada, but it is in the States. It's where they are so threatened and freaked out by the idea that the homosexual is attracted to them or trying to engage with them sexually, that they just freak out and they black out and it's all a blur. And it's not my fault. The fact that this person was challenging my own understanding of sexual identity, that I murdered them and therefore I have no culpability. Now, it sounds absolutely ridiculous because it is, and it has been deemed ridiculous under Canadian law, not maybe necessarily with those words, but it's the idea that you can't fob off your own actions because, you know, your sexuality got challenged by somebody, or your understanding of another faith got challenged by somebody. Or something.
I mean, coming down to it, it's weird because I would never think that gay panic is an actual... I guess I knew it was, but I never actually acknowledged it was. But if you think about it, how panicked do you have to be to kill a person or to, beat a person?
This just kind of reminds me of not the same situation, I know, but when New York City police officers shoot black men, and like they perceive them already as as they exist in the world as threatening and dangerous, and so they tend to pull their gun more often, right? It's kind of like, but I mean, it's an issue of the perception of the other person's threat towards you prior to them actually doing anything, you know what I mean?
I see what you mean, usually I feel like homophobia isn't a phobia. Like, people aren't afraid of gay men. Like, if you are gonna beat up a gay man because he just proposed sex to you, or if he was engaging or trying to engage in sexual whatever with you, then that's because you are either offended, angry, or any of those negative emotions. But to me, to say that because you're afraid of a gay man, because some, or like any person, if you're afraid of someone who just say that I'm into you, then that's weird.
So just to clarify here, I'm reading a bit more about the case. They were drinking, hanging out, playing music.
I see.
They were
hanging out.
There were more contacts.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so this could be a case of.
But the argument was that for Miller, it was self-defense. Even though at no point did they ever say that Spencer was intending to cause bodily harm. Even though the gay guy never tried to hurt him, it was self-defense. Absolutely vital that he murder him to prevent him from engaging in any sexual activity.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because if someone is trying to rape you sexually, yes, you're
intending bodily harm.
That's intending bodily harm. You are allowed to defend yourself. But you know, if someone just like, oh, I like you.
But if you perceive him liking you as threatening to you, like, for example, this guy could have been gay himself, mm-hmm. which I think this tends to happen more often.
This man identifies as straight.
Of course he identifies as straight. The point is, he could have been gay himself.
Well, I think I want to wrap this up, this conversation up a little bit. I think what this is an example of is that kind of extreme reaction to having your straight, normal identity challenged.
Yeah.
Exactly. And in Texas, apparently, it is legal to kill somebody if they challenge your sexuality. The American Bar Association, I want to add, have noted that they want to ban that defense. In many states, that is banned already. And I'm sure that in Texas, they're going to have this conversation again. The judge in this case, in all fairness, is bound by the jury decision, but did slap on more jail time, did slap on a big fine, and did slap on a need for community service, you know, did as much as he could for addressing the restitution. So I think the legal system, you know, us looking in is like, how on earth is that a defense? But until they change it, that's going to be what it is. I think they did the best they could given that particular jury decision. But does it surprise you, having had our conversation around how misogyny and how being effeminate and being gay and challenging heterosexuality and challenging being straight and queer, lesbian language, all of that comes together, and when it's at the extreme end, people die. Does that surprise you?
Not at all.
Not at all. To me, like, again, I still feel like he was angry instead of panic or afraid, and that's kind of the bottom line where I think the gender, the idea of having his sexuality challenge made him angry, and that is just the people.
You could also be afraid and angry at the same time.
But where is that anger coming from?
Right,
and that's really the point we're all getting to here. That anger is coming from his notion of his sexuality being challenged,
and that's a scary thing, is what I'm trying to say. That terrifies.
But that is no excuse for murder.
No, of course
and
it is.
On that wonderful note, we're going to be playing out. With something a bit more upbeat, and there's a bit of a welcoming for Vesna into the world of lesbians with Carol Pope. I think Carol Pope's Lesbians in the Forest. It's a fun song. It's Canadian, obviously, and we'll be back next week where I will be joined by either Sebastian or Bradley. I'm not sure which one yet. And if you have anything that you'd like to respond to in this show, please reach out. Your feedback is more than welcome. Get in touch with the station or with us directly at Talk Hang Queer or on Facebook, website, and Twitter. That's all for me. I've been Luke Smith.
Vesna.
Thanks for listening.
Let's go into the forest and menstruate on a stick. Look, there's a drum circle. Maybe we could join in. Let's go down to the fire pit, roast some tofu dogs. Maybe some dykes in a tent will have some beer. We're lesbians in the forest. Let's go to the S&M tent and learn how to fisk. We can do whatever we want, cause this is a man-free zone. Except for the guys who emptied the chains, we don't call them Johns. Here at the Michigan Women's Festival, we worship the goddess. We're lesbians in the forest.
Why does everybody with a frightening body walk around naked? Why do women grow facial hair? Why do I have to look at that? No offense to anyone who's transitioning. There's my ex with her new girlfriend. Buddy, you are so much hotter. You're Alan's ex, Katie's ex, Alicia's ex, Portia's ex, the Indigo's ex.